In our public hearing on the first of a group of bills that will bring before the committee a variety of issues dealing with the correction system beyond the point of the conviction of a criminal defendant. And we're going to begin with the interim judiciary bill relating to the creation of a judicial matrix sentencing system. Let's start with Mr. Griffin.
Mr. Chairman, members of the subcommittee, my name is Stephen L. Griffith. I am a lawyer and associate at the law firm of Stowe, Reeves, Foley, Fraser, and Wise. My practice is in civil litigation. This last year, I was on the interim task force, which looked at the system, the procedure for imposition of criminal sentences, and particularly what happens when the decision is made, or the possible decision is made, to incarcerate the defendant. I'm here to speak on House Bill 2087 on its behalf. 2087 is somewhat like an opinion of the Supreme Court of the United States in that each of the sections or elements of that bill represents decision or a recommendation of a majority of the members of our task force, but I'm not sure that any one member of the task force would have stated that he or she was an advocate for all of the sections. The purpose of the task force and the purpose of this bill was twofold. First of all, to instill a greater degree of truth in sentencing. Second, to address the problem of prison overcrowding. The first question is one of procedure or process. The second one is a question of the end or net result. After sentencing is over, what is the shape of our prisons in terms of their population? The vice of our present system is that there is no necessary connection whatsoever between the sentence which is imposed by the judge, the time of sentencing, if it is one to incarceration, and the period of years which a defendant may end up serving as a result of later decisions by the parole board. It's not just a question that the public does not have sufficient information as to what is going on. The fact is that they are the recipients of positive disinformation as to how the criminal justice system is treating the, or plans to treat the defendant before the court. There are a number of costs to our present system, and this bill is a response to those costs. First of all, it shakes the credibility of the criminal justice system in a number of ways. The public is deceived as to how long an individual will be serving time. The honor or the authority of judges is undermined in the sense that almost invariably the sentence which they purport to impose is greater than, and in fact bears no relation to, the actual sentence imposed. And in fact, the criminal defendant himself or herself is apt to treat more lightly the pronouncement at the time of sentence of a judge, knowing in fact that the real decision is made later on in the process. In other words, there is a systematic creation of a false expectation as a result of the sentence imposed by a trial judge. another vice, or final vice of this situation, is that it tends to lead to posturing or the issuance of symbolic sentences. Circuit court judges of this state, knowing that what they say has some but certainly not a determinative effect on the prison term to be served, are apt to issue a symbolic sentence of either the maximum allowed by statute as a sentence, or simply to stack sentences consecutively and allow the parole board, in effect, to challenge the parole board if it dares or if it wishes to unstack them. It creates a tension and an adversarial situation between the judges and the parole board, which we believe was unhealthy. As far as the public goes, at the time that a sentence is imposed, the public believes that justice has been done, because indeed a 60-year sentence has been imposed, and the defendant is released 3.5 years later from prison. There is this cry of outrage, unjustly so, against the parole board, and the anger and the consternation of the public is turned towards that body rather than to confront the actual issue which is involved, which is prison resources, correctional resources, and the size of the defendant population. The task force believes that the motor which runs our present system, which is the matrix, is a good and valuable tool. The function of the matrix is at least to achieve a form of justice. It takes various individuals from all parts of the state or from various courtrooms in the same courthouse, and it says no matter who sentenced you, there are certain basic similarities which should be honored at the time of determining the effective sentence, so that persons who are guilty, who have been found guilty of approximately the same crime and who have approximately the same criminal history and risk evaluation, should be treated the same. That is a fundamental notion of our sense of justice, and it is one which I believe the task force unanimously endorsed. And the way that you preserve that equity function, you can call it a matrix or you can call it something else, but the way that you preserve that is to keep some set of criteria which will apply to all felony defendants and will judge them all at some point in the process according to what type of crime they've been convicted of and what is their criminal past and a few other indicators as far as their potential for future criminal conduct. Okay. Once you accept that premise, you have the possibility opening up of a second and very important possible function of the matrix, which is as a regulator or an adjuster of your criminal population sentenced to prison and the available bed space. It is a superb tool, in fact, an almost seductively efficient tool for adjusting how many people you have in prison to how many prison beds you have. Since I understand that the operation of the matrix has been explained to you, since every box within the matrix is simply an indication of the number of months that a particular individual is to serve, or a range of months which the individual is to serve. All you have to do is tinker with those numbers, push them up or push them down, and you can adjust your prison population to prevent any overcrowding that you want, if you wish to use the matrix for that purpose. House Bill 2087 does not go so far as to recommend that the matrix should be the exclusive tool for curing our prison overcrowding problem.
Okay. I call people.
But it does contain language, in effect, a charge to the newly created Commission on Prison Terms, does contain language which would allow those persons who are charged with the continuing responsibility for developing the matrix, allows them to take into account and to consider what's happening out there in the real world in terms of prison overcrowding or prison undercrowding, whatever your use of terms. Just one further word on that. The reason that we did not recommend a total reliance on the matrix to solve any sort of resource problems is that it may not be the best way of handling an overcrowding or a crowding problem. There is always the possibility that more resources can be devoted to the provision of additional facilities. There is also the possibility that an enlightened program of probation or diversion of defendants can be instituted or paid attention to, which would also relieve the pressure on our prisons. Therefore, the matrix, while we wholeheartedly recommend that it be preserved and used to achieve equity as among persons who are sentenced to incarceration, we feel should be used but not exclusively as a tool for addressing the problem of prison crowding. Where our task force it's in effect its original proposal, and the point at which it will differ from, I believe, some or many of the speakers here is who should be responsible for the continued supervision or development of the matrix, and at what point in the criminal process do we tell the defendant and tell the public that a given term shall be your term of incarceration in accordance with the matrix. Our task force has proposed that the present Advisory Commission on Prison Terms and Parole Standards be renamed, revised, and have its composition changed. At the present time,
abolished
and replaced with a commission with very similar function. At the present time, I believe I'm right in saying that it has five judicial members, five circuit court judges, and all five members of the parole board, and there is an 11th person who is a representative of the governor of Oregon. Our feeling is that the judicial membership on this body should not be diminished and, in fact, should be given a clear majority position. We do this partly out of a recognition of the need to relate that body which is developing these standards to those individuals who must apply them, the judges, and also as a reflection of perhaps a political philosophy that it is the proper function of judges to make sentencing decisions of this sort. As far as the remaining, and so our recommendation is that in fact there be six rather than five judges, and not very great change. We're also recommending that the membership from the parole board be reduced from five to one. This again reflects our other recommendation that the matrix be applied not by the parole board now, but by the sentencing judge at the time of sentencing. We feel that the parole board's presence is less important or need not be manifested in five positions on this commission. We feel that it's sufficient but also necessary to have the chairperson of the parole board on this commission. In addition, it would be appropriate to have a qualified representative from the prosecution, that is to say from among the district attorneys, and from the defense bar. And given the acknowledged use or acknowledged potential use of the matrix to address prison resource problems, and given the acknowledged potential for problems within the inmate population caused by any change in the standards which are contained in the matrix, we feel that it's highly appropriate to have the Assistant Director for Corrections of the Department of Resources on, and finally, a member of the public. As I say, at the present time, the real-time determination for an individual who is sentenced to incarceration occurs, I think, any time from 3 to 6 months after he or she is purportedly sentenced. I think most striking and controversial proposal which we are making is that determination be shifted from one made by the parole board to one made by the sentencing judge. In other words, at the time of sentencing, by applying the facts of the case before the judge to the acknowledged standards or criteria for determining a period of imprisonment, the sentencing court could in fact perform the very function which the parole board is now performing.
Mr. Chairman? I just wanted to make my apologies. I've got to testify as a principal sponsor on a bill at 3, and I'll be back in just a few minutes, but I know it's getting a little sparse up here, so I, having been on the task force, I think I know where you're going. I'll be back shortly.
To enable the sentencing judge to make that determination, he or she, the judge, would have to go through many of the same findings and decisions that the parole board now does. We believe that it is possible to do that. First of all, you need a pre-sentence report which is accurate or sufficiently accurate that you are willing to make a final sentencing decision based upon it. As things now stand, a pre-sentence report is not ordered, I believe I'm correct in saying this, is not ordered until after there's been a finding of guilt or a plea of guilty. And there is therefore only a space of a few weeks between the finding of guilt and the time of sentencing to prepare the pre-sentence report. And in that length of time, we received sort of uncontroverted testimony, you can't prepare a good pre-sentence report. But we believe, and we received testimony, that you can prepare an accurate pre-sentence report if you start the process going earlier. That is to say, at the time of arraignment of a person charged with committing a felony. Your time span then is not your 2 or 3 weeks, but 2 or 3 months. And we feel that that's a sufficient time for the various searches within the jurisdiction of Oregon, but also the other state and federal jurisdictions in this country to determine what the individual's actual criminal record is. As far as the procedure at the time of sentencing, we're recommending that the court impose sentence based upon the facts in the pre-sentence report unless challenged. And you will see in House Bill 2087 on page 4 that our recommendation is that the standard be by a preponderance of the evidence and that the finding be made by the court. This system of so-called determinate sentencing, in other words, sentencing such that the defendant and the public and the court know what length of time that an individual is going to serve, if indeed the individual is going to be incarcerated, is already in place and working in Minnesota. 2 years ago, it was approved for enactment in the state of Washington. And about a month and a half ago, I was presented with a draft of a document which is going to be proposed by the Federal Bureau of Prisons as federal legislation. To the extent that anyone's theory of convergent evolution makes an idea good or bad in its time, I will say I would represent to the committee that although your interim task force generated this, I believe, pretty much out of whole cloth, we are encouraged by the fact that proposals very, very similar to this in concept are being enacted in other states and now being proposed at the federal level. One sort of final major feature of this bill, which I should point out now, is the question is, what becomes of the parole board? We believe that the parole board should properly be responsible for those aspects of the incarceration and treatment of a criminal defendant which are prospective, which look forward to the individual's re-entry into society, the chance of the individual's rehabilitation or reformation since the time of sentencing, and that the sentencing judge should be concerned with what is retrospective, what is history. And our proposal is, in any given determinate sentence which would be imposed pursuant to the matrix, the figure is arbitrary, but the concept is that the final 20% of that time will indeed be served, but is served subject to the supervision of the parole board and the corrections division under rules which they may enact, so that good behavior or reformation or an appropriate program for reentry into society still can be reflected and recognized. And that would occur in the final 20% of a term, but the first 80% of a term would indeed be determinate. I would make the committee aware of, I'd be remiss in my duty if I did not inform you of several constitutional questions which have arisen in connection with this piece of legislation. The first of which is, may judges sit on the newly created Commission on Prison Terms? The question there being, may a member of the judicial branch perform a function which is arguably a function of the executive branch? The second question is, may the Legislative Assembly delegate to the Commission on Prison Terms such a great degree of authority for developing these rules under which the matrix will be developed, and as you can see, there are aggravating and mitigating factors, and indeed rules for sentencing in the event of multiple offenses. And third, may the court, as opposed to the jury at the time of sentencing, find the facts which lead you to the appropriate box in the matrix, that is to say, the facts regarding a person's criminal past and or propensity for future criminal conduct. That is an issue which is a significant one. I forget the name of any. There's now a developing line of Oregon Supreme Court decisions which indicates that when something in the nature of an aggravation, something which will result in an aggravation of sentence, is to be found, that finding must be made by the jury. As I say, House Bill 2087 was the product of many people working over a considerable length of time. Many of the proposals here would be valid proposals, independent of whether the entire package is accepted. But we believe that this represents a picture or an image of where Oregon should be headed, namely truth in sentencing, such that we get away from the present system whereby the words which are spoken, the words which issue from a judge's mouth at the time of sentencing, bear no relation to the actual sentence served.
Thank you, Steve. Can you stay around for a while? It might be well we go ahead and get the total testimony on the bill, and then maybe we can have questions in the context of having heard that full array of discussion, if there's no objection to the committee to doing it that way. Representative Springer?
Mr. Chair, while the next witness comes up, I just, as chair of the interim task force, I want to try to embellish the excellent summation that Mr. Griffin has given us, but only to, I hope once again, commend him and our counsel, Linda Zuckerman, and many people who are present in this room for their service on that task force. We met in literally dozens of meetings, long hours on weekends that might otherwise be spent into personal pursuits were given on this discussion of a very important subject. And I think as Mr. Griffin has framed the issues, they're ones that certainly are worthy of our very serious consideration.
Judge Hargraves?
Judge Bumbrick, do you wish to come up at the same time?
I have a few comments.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jim Hargraves. I'm circuit judge from Lane County. I tend to keep my remarks also rather short. I think that Mr. Griffith did a good job of outlining things that were discussed, and I was at a number of the meetings where discussions were had and participated in some of those. The problems in the bill, he certainly has indicated some of them in terms, obviously, of the most difficult problems in terms of the constitutional questions. I'd like to address a couple of others and then suggest to the committee that there's simply no need to go through all of what would be involved in doing this, that in my opinion and the opinion I think of a number of other judges around the state, that there is a much more simple way to approach the problem if in fact this is the direction that the legislature wants to go. One of the main problems from the judiciary point of view, setting aside any constitutional questions that are involved here, is that I believe most judges do not agree that this bill produces truth in sentencing, if that's going to be the catchword here. What it does is it simply shifts the falsity in sentencing to the trial judge level and will require the trial judge to give a sentence to an individual which in most or many cases would not be the sentence that that trial judge would choose to impose had he or she anything to say about it. It will continue the myth that people are being sentenced by their elected officials in a fashion that they think is appropriate, when in truth and in fact what is happening is those people will be sentenced in accordance with a matrix that is imposed upon them and that they are required to follow, and that to date has had nothing to do with what the judges think are the appropriate sentences to be imposed, and there's no reason to believe that that would change under the bill as proposed in 2087. As I've indicated, I think there are tremendous problems. One example is saying starting the pre-sentence report on everyone when they come into the system. The costs and the time and the effort involved in that seem to me to be pretty disproportionate to